pop yourself a beer or a cold libation. Let me tell you how I wrote this little theme. I went and took a call from Brother Jason, and he tells me that he has a little dream. He says he needs a backwards intro to begin his podcast, and I ask him, what you got? He said, I'll start off with some talking and some moody clips of popcorn fighting fantasy explorations and some groundless exploitation. Kickstarts that I'm watching and some blind unboxing, full month horror movie marathon. Sometimes I let the dogs come on, contests and of course you know it's all about games. That's a slogan, let's just start with the name. It's the Nerds RPG Variety Podcast. The other Jason.
Welcome back to Nerds RPG Variety Cast. I'm your host, Jason. Today is another episode in our Walter Hill retrospective series. And today, my good friend Eric from the Omega 3D Chicken Coop is joining me, and we're going to talk about 1980s The Long Riders.
This will be a spoiler filled discussion.
How are you doing, Eric?
Good. I have a question for you, though. You initially, when you were like, oh, I'm going to do this Walter Hill, series for this year. And, you know, I'm not very good with directors outside of like Michael Bay and Ridley Scott and like Spielberg and, you know, the guys that are like huge, huge names. I don't know directors as well as you do. You're more of a filmy than I am. You were like, oh, I don't know if you would like his movies. And then I started looking at like Walter Hill films, and I was like, why does Jason not think I would like Walter Hill movies?
Especially like, when you saw Red Heat, right?
What was the basis behind that?
Oh no, I didn't. No, I don't know. I kind of am I'm the kind of person that downplays everything and is always
you have several buddy cop movies in there.
Yep.
You have Last Man Standing, which I'm a big fan of. You got Brewster's Millions. I mean, it's quite the filmography. It's kind of there are some similar themes in a lot of these, but there are also some things that are, you know, very different at the same time.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because Walter Hill said that he approaches all his movies Westerns, and he kind of in his mind thinks of every movie he makes as a Western. Which in this case, of course, it is a straight Western, right? But see that when you look at his other movies. Go ahead.
No, you keep going and then I'll comment as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, whether we look at Streets of Fire, which was the first one that got talked about at the end of last year, or The Warriors or whatever. I mean, we can easily see Western themes in any of these movies, you know, which is kind of cool. But that's Westerns in general. That's the cool thing about Westerns. Are there so many universal themes in that genre that, you know, that you can really tell in any place and time?
Well, you look at, and I think it has to do, I was thinking about this the other day, and I know this is an aside from actually talking about the movie. We're like living, I know each generation and each era has its own thing, right? But like the entertainment era that we're in right now, we're hitting the remakes, right, uh-huh, of various films. And a lot of the things that are built now that we watch from an entertainment standpoint are built from the first TV shows and the first movies. So you see a lot of Western themes. Mandalorian is hugely, it's a space Western, right?
Right.
We talk about Dungeons and Dragons being Western themed. I know that was a conversation. So I think the Western theme in itself is pervasive in tons of different things because of it was like one of the first big entertainment things that we could like consume with our eyes on scale. Right.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's funny cause they say it's a uniquely American thing. You have some similar things in some other countries, but the idea of the Western movie, because, you know, they made movies all across the world when movie making started. I'm not using good words here today. Right. But when we think about that, the birth of cinematography, you know, they're making movies in Europe and everywhere else, but from the very beginning here in the States, we were making Westerns, and you know, there are probably more Westerns, US made Westerns than any other country, but those are the things that have been exported out as well to other countries. And so it's kind of an interesting thing where the Westerns kind of, you know, they say it's a uniquely American thing, kind of like they say blues is uniquely American. I don't know if the Western is totally uniquely American, but I do think the Western movie and what we've kind of built out of that started as an American thing. Obviously, it's been built upon by other cultures after that. Like you look at the spaghetti Westerns, which kind of built, you know, we see themes from the spaghetti Westerns in American movies, but the Italians then took and did their own thing with it, you know, which they do with all genres, which is great. I love Italian film.
Yeah. The only other movie like culture that I think is, at least in my opinion, similar to the American style Western would be the samurai films.
Yeah.
That they have a very similar kind of theme, you know, like the lone Ronin that's crossing the countryside is like your lone gunman type thing, where they have, mm-hmm. you know, the Ronin obviously have a different code of honor, but like, and we'll talk about this a little bit in this movie once we get to it, but there's always this code of honor with the gunslinger or the cowboy or the bandit, you know, in these Western right. movies.
Oh, well, definitely. Yeah. And Kurosawa was a big fan of Westerns, obviously, you know, and there's a lot of cross pollination between the two as well, which is kind of cool. I real quickly before we get started, I do want to apologize to everybody. I'm getting over the flu, so my voice is a little bit off, you know, just heads up. The other thing we want to do before we dive into this is, Eric, what are you drinking?
Well, Jason, how did you know that I'd be drinking this evening? I am drinking a 7-layer bar pastry stout from Untitled Art, which is out of Wanakee, Wisconsin, here in Wisconsin. And it is an 11%er. So this is a big one. It's very sweet. It's a dessert beer, and I've already eaten dinner, so it is my dessert this evening.
There we go.
How about you, Jason?
I'm just drinking a highball. We mentioned Italian. I'm drinking J&B, Scotch whiskey, blended whiskey, and ginger ale. You know, nothing fancy.
Hey, I often drink Jim Beam rye with just zero sugar 7-Up. That's my kind of go-to right now. So I get you. Nothing fancy. Gets the job done.
That's right. So the Long Riders. You know, this is an interesting film because this started not with Walter Hill or even with the studio system, but it started with the Keaches, with James and Stacy Keach. They had worked together on a play about the Wright brothers, and they played brothers there. And then they kind of, I think it was mainly James Keach who plays Jesse James in this movie, who had the idea, hey, we should do a movie about, you know, the James brothers. And they did a play for it, and they tinkered with the idea of doing a musical. They pulled back from that, but eventually they pitched it to the studios and they got the brain fart, and the Carradines in, I think David Carradine initially, but they got the Carradines involved, and the, you know, the idea of the brothers playing brothers.
They got the Quaids involved.
Well, they did. And the guests come on as the bad guys, right? As the Fords. And they were going to actually, you know, the Bridges brothers were going to play the Fords. But the schedules didn't work. It was going to be Bo and Jeff, but the schedules just didn't work out. And then so the Guest brothers, and I think that's fine because I really like Christopher Nicholas Guest as Charlie and Robert Ford in this movie. I think they're appropriately slimy and they're appropriately, you know, they work, which is kind of weird to say because this is a historical piece. It's, you know, it obviously there are little things that are changed because whenever you make a movie about history, you're going to change small details here and there. But for the most part, this is pretty accurate to timelines and what happened. And it, you know, it's interesting the way they do this movie. So I definitely want to talk about that. I was going to say, before we dive into that, I wanted to ask you, when's the first time you remember seeing this movie?
So I don't know. And this is one of those ones where you watch a movie and you're like, have I seen parts of this before? And, you know, being 1980, that was the year I was born, right? So definitely didn't see it in the theaters. So, you know, but based on syndication and, you know, different TV, are the themes similar to where I think, you know, where I'm like, oh, have I seen this or have I seen a scene similar to this? So this is my first time watching it where I can definitely say I watched it start to finish. But I may have watched it before and I just didn't remember because it would have been, you know, at least 20 years prior.
Yeah, I didn't see it in the theater. I don't remember when I first saw it. I'm sure this was on cable. I'm sure I first saw it on cable on HBO or Prism or wherever. But Yeah, I remember seeing this as a kid, and over the years have revisited occasionally. So now that we kind of to set that benchmark, you know, this is kind of a strange film too, because you can feel the where this was originally written kind of as a play. You can almost feel that in the way it's set up, because it's not a typical three act structure. You know, it's almost like a four act structure with the way they end it out. And you can feel like a screen. You can almost feel that stage. I mean, it's obviously a big film with big expanses, and the action scenes are great and all that, but you can feel almost how it was adapted from a play, from the way that, the way the script flows.
So that's a really good point. I didn't realize that until, but now that you mention it, that totally makes sense. So can we go to the casting real quick?
Yeah. And let's kind talk of talk into
that.
Yeah.
So what I like about the fact that about the cast, first off, anyone watches, you can recognize a ton of people, younger than what we see them now. And in some cases, some of them have passed on, unfortunately. But what I like is, so for people that aren't aware of the story, it's a family driven story, right? You have the younger clan, which is a very like large family. I believe it is Missouri, right? Uh-huh. Is the place, very large family in that area. Right. So there's a lot of youngers, and then you have, the James brothers, right? So you have this family thing, and then you have the Ford brother or the Ford brothers.
Well, yeah. And the Millers. Yeah,
yep. And the Millers. Right. So it's a very, with Randy, and I'm looking over at my notes here, and Dennis Quaid. Right. So it's a very family driven film. Well, they cast family in those roles. So to me, that helps build the connection where it's not like a forced thing. Because like I don't know if Dennis Quaid and Randy Quaid are like full brothers or half brothers, whatever they are. But like, I know they're related, and now they're related in the movie. So from a viewer standpoint, it's an easier connection. It's not like me trying to relate Scarlett Johansson and Bill Murray together. Like, I know they're not related, right? One's very beautiful and one is not so much as beautiful. So it's hard to like make that connection.
You can't put down Scarlett Johansson like that. But you know, it's the other thing it does is it makes it easier on you, because they're obviously related for the most part, especially like the Keaches. There's no question James and Stacey Keach are brothers, right?
Yeah.
They have a strong resemblance in the face, you know, certain facial features and all. And even with the other brothers too, the guests especially. I think look the
flip. Yeah, they have the same chin. I mean, if you go look at the picture of them, their chin is identical.
Yeah. So that makes it easier as a viewer, you know, to buy them as brothers, because they are. To my knowledge, this is the first, at least American movie, and maybe the only one since, to really use brothers in this way at the scale. I mean, you have movies like with Wayne and brothers playing together or stuff like that, but not, I mean, there's four sets of brothers in the movie playing.
Yeah.
I don't know any other movie that matches that.
So the character to me that doesn't fit from an appearance standpoint is John Younger, played by Kevin Brophy. He does not look like the other Youngers. However, I would say he does an excellent job of portraying someone who cares about the family that he is playing part of.
And in here, although he I believe was a brother in real life, I'd have to look at that. They say him as a cousin in this movie too, which helps offset that. And in fact, James's baby, Jesse's baby, is his baby. So that's James Keach's son. Kalen Keach, who plays Jesse James, plays Jesse's son. When we see that little baby in there,
at the very end in the last scene,
that's his son. Yeah.
Okay, so they did it. So for a movie that's supposed to be based on family and family allegiances by casting family, I know they always talk about nepotism in Hollywood. Actually one where it works because of the whole concept of it.
Yeah, it's amazing. And this was something actually they say that this sold it to the studios. This was going to be a miniseries. And then the studio that was going to put it on the miniseries, a 6-hour miniseries, the executive changed hands, and the new CEO or whatever canceled all the miniseries that were pending. But then they pitched it to movie theater, the film studios, and one of the film studios picked it up.
I think I would have liked it better as a miniseries.
It could have used more fleshing out. One thing about this is, so we talked a little bit about the structure as kind of like a play. And I think there's two things for a modern viewer that might go against this movie. I mean, I like this movie a lot, but I know quite a bit about history and this stuff. And, you know, but when we look at this, there's two things we have going on here. One is the pacing, and you feel that a little bit with that play. You know, the action scenes are exciting and they're well done, but the film's not in a rush to get anywhere. You know, if it wants to tell the story it wants to tell, and it's going to do it in its own time. And it's not a long movie. It's like an hour and 40 minutes, hour 30.
No, it's pretty short. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's still you can feel it's taking the time where it wants to take time. And I like that. But I think to a modern viewer, that would be hard. The other thing for a modern viewer, maybe, or somebody that's not steeped in this history, is it doesn't do anything to help you with the history. It assumes you know the story. It assumes you know who all these people are. It assumes you know what happens to them. You know, later on, they'll name them Jesse James. But initially, we're just using first names. And then even at the end of the movie, we don't get, like, if this movie is made today. Well, so the movie opens, the only setting we get is Missouri after the Civil War, right? A movie today would give you all this background and talk about all this stuff. And then at the end, it would say, this guy went to jail and this guy did this and this guy did that. This movie doesn't do any of that because it assumes you already know that. You already know who the Youngers are. You know who the Jameses are. So you just want to see it come alive in front of you. But it assumes you know the history.
Well, and to your point, someone like me who doesn't know this era of film very well, and you only think of who the actors are now in the opening scene, you could assume that Dennis Quaid's character is Jesse James, because Dennis Quaid is a bigger actor now, right? He's still acting now. You know who he is, right? Or David Carradine, you know, you could assume that they're the main guys. And, you know, I know Jesse James is in this movie, but would you say Jesse James is the main character of the movie?
No, I think if any of the brothers get more focus, it's David Carradine, it's Cole Younger.
Yeah.
If anybody does. Yeah.
And I don't know about David Carradine's profile in 1980, right? Like, I know he did. I don't know how big his profile was. I only know him from Kung Fu and the Kill Bill movies and some other things. I don't know if his profile in 1980 was bigger than the rest of them. And that's why they focused on Cole Younger's character. And that's why, from a miniseries standpoint, it probably would have been better, because then the characters could have been highlighted more in the relationships, because they did focus a little bit on the relationships with the female counterparts for each character. And they were limited, though. Like Cole Younger has the relationship with Pamela Reed's character, Belle Starr, right? But then it just ends very abruptly in the knife fight scene. Like,
well, yeah, it's a great just, knife fight with James Remar from the
It just ends there, and you're like, why did that end? You know, like, did she want him to not win? Like, to like prove him wrong about all, because I'm not going to use the language that he utilizes, but she is a lady of that works in this in the trades. She's a prostitute. Okay. But he uses very rough language when discussing it. And it doesn't seem like he gives her a lot of respect in the movie, which I'm sure is probably period accurate. So if you're not ready to see some period accurate things regarding that profession and the treatment of that profession, then I wouldn't watch the movie. If I were you, I'd fast forward through those parts. But like, yeah, I could see in a mini series that relationship being developed more. And then I don't remember. I'm looking at the actresses right now. I'm trying to, because John Younger with the redheaded, she had like kind of like a red auburn colored hair, and she initially was going to be married.
Beth. That was Amy Stryker.
Beth. Yeah, Amy Stryker. Yeah, that relationship as well didn't get as much chance to develop. And then Jesse and his wife as well. There was some development there, but I can see in a miniseries that they would have dove into those relationships a little bit more.
They really fast track some of this stuff. So like where we have Frank James, Stacy Keach, you know, we see him looking at the lady at the dance, you know, or not the dance, at the wedding.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
At his brother's wedding. And you know, you see him kind of looking at one lady, and he's asking Randy Quaid, you know, have you ever been in love and all. And then the next time we see, you know, we switch up and when they're splitting up after the ambush at the barn. But after that ambush, when they're all splitting up, now Frank is already hooked up with her and you know, they're going off to start their horse.
Yeah. There's definitely some time jumps.
Yeah.
time jumps in there that I think that, yes, if it would have been a longer movie or a miniseries, would have been better. And yeah, I agree as well that David Carradine, Paul Younger felt like more of like the main character, because they did develop that relationship more with Pamela Reed's character. And it felt like he got more screen time. Like James Keach, I don't know the history on Jesse James as well. Like, I don't know what type of person he is described as in the history books or, you know, whatever chronicles. But I would say that they played him as a very, James played him as like a very kind of boring person. And I don't know if that is that accurate of what you've heard of Jesse James's character and like what he was. I mean, these guys were all Civil War vets, right? And they fought for the Confederacy because they were Southern. That also was another element to the movie. They're definitely pro Confederate. Yeah, well, so if that's going to bother with
The Jameses and the Youngers rode with Quantrell's Raiders. Now Bob Younger didn't. He was only 8 during the time of the war. Although he saw his dad killed during the war and during a raid and stuff. But yeah, so they had history, and that's also lent some credence here later on when we see some horse riding things. Like the idea of them with the horses going through the glass, the plate glass.
Oh, yes, that's always
that iconic scene
crossing the river and stuff. Yeah,
yeah, but they lived with horses and all during the Civil War, so they would know, they'd be able to get the horses to do things normally you wouldn't be able to get them to do, right? So yes. The other thing we see in here that's interesting. So it's not a white hat, black hat Western, right? It's definitely a gray morality thing, because even though, our gang here is portrayed in the more sympathetic light, they don't cover up the fact that, they are thieving. There are thieves. They are robbing. They are killing people. They are doing these things. And they're not apologetic about it either. They say, this is what I do, this is what I'm going to do. And they know they're doing that. But it definitely paints the Pinkertons in a pretty bad light, which I think all of us are probably okay with. But, the Pinkertons here, they ride into town. They end up, say, killing John Younger, who wasn't involved at all. And then they kill, what was his name? Was it Bob? They killed
No, they didn't kill John Younger. Brother. They killed.
Yeah.
John was the blonde one, right? He had more of the bowler style hat.
No, that's Keith Carradine. That's Jim Younger. No, John was the brother, was the cousin that was killed.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. He was the younger one. Okay. I messed up. Yeah. I was going to.
That's Keith Carradine. That's Jim Younger. Yeah.
You are correct. Okay.
He's the one that gets shot in the mouth through the.
Yes. Okay. He is my favorite character in the movie.
Yeah,
I got those two confused.
Yeah, he does a great. Now, I still think Cole's the main character in this.
Yes,
you could argue Cole or Jim Younger, David or Keith Carradine, but they're, I think, the main. But yeah, and no, Keith Carradine knocks it out of the park here. There are some looks in here, like you mentioned Beth, and there's a scene where they're at the brothers after the Pinkertons, blow up the house and kill their brother. The younger brother and they're there and Ed's there and Ed didn't bring gun. Ed's like, I'm not going to fight your battle for you. And the look that, Keith Carradine gives him. It's great.
Keith Carradine is my favorite character and he probably gets the second most screen time. Significant screen time. Randy Quaid gets a lot of screen time too. But he's kind of more of like he's comic relief. He always is, but it's not like over the top. Like, so when I say comic relief, he's not over the top comic relief. He's like the overall wearing, he's what you expect Randy Quaid to play in a Western. I mean, but in a little more serious Western. So no, those were very good. Okay. So let's talk about, first off, what do you want to talk about next? I guess it's your show. I'm like trying to take over here.
No, you're fine. One thing the film tells us right away, as soon as we get in this movie, is it's a period piece and it's serious about being a period piece. From the music to the costumes to the way they speak, it is very serious about being a period piece. It's, you know what I mean? There might be slight inaccuracies here or there, but it is not trying at all to be one of these movies that kind of you know, yeah. so with that. It tries really hard.
It's not Young Guns.
No, it's not Young Guns at all.
So what I found interesting is the first scene when they're in the brothel bar, yep. The musicians are actually playing and singing in the mm-hmm. movie, which is really cool. And the musician plays what must be a Union song.
Yeah.
I know you were a Civil War and reenactor, so you probably know this better than I do. Mm-hmm. And they get upset about it.
Yeah,
And that's kind of the first thing where you get the whole, oh, yeah, these boys were part of the Confederate, the rebels. And Randy Quaid's character goes over and is like, tells the musician basically like, do you want to die? And then he ends up playing one of the rebel songs. Right. So it's cool that they have like the live music, like actual music being played in there by musicians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The music here is really well done. Ry Cooter does the music in here. He does the music for a ton of Water Hill films, and he does a great job here. Some of this is probably authentic. A lot of it he made up, but it's off. He might have wrote the pieces, but they're written to be authentic, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It wasn't like they're playing Beastie Boys in an action sequence or anything like that. It made sense it felt like they were trying to be realistic with what was happening.
And this is interesting because so this film was filmed in Georgia because they wanted to film Missouri. But when you go to Missouri, back to these places now, it's just so built up. It's hard to capture the feel. But, you know, people don't really, you know, when we think of Westerns, we think of Arizona, right? New Mexico. We think of mesas,
and Texas, deserts.
And But what we're seeing here in Georgia, I mean, you've probably been to Missouri at some point. You know, this isn't unbelievable as the terrain.
They end up in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that they went that far north. I'm sure it's the southern part of Minnesota.
Northfield, wherever I'd have to look that up.
As a Wisconsinite, I hate Minnesota, so I try to not acknowledge its existence. But so it's from that standpoint, it's a different feel. It's got that southeast feel. Like mm-hmm. if you've ever been to Georgia, Alabama, Arkansas, Western Florida, it has a different feel compared to your dry, arid. Like what I think of like Clint Eastwood movies. That's like my mm-hmm. kind of Westerns where like Clint is walking through town, dust blowing around him. You know, it's there's water, you know, there's greenery. It almost has like a Robin Hood feel.
We have the newspaper man throughout this too.
Yeah.
He's there and he makes his appearances. But you get this idea. Although, the movie shows it pretty clearly. They're not Robin Hood. They're not giving money away to other than paying the bars for the drinks they're getting and paying the prostitutes for the services rendered or whatever. But they're not spreading. I mean, I'm sure they're giving money to their families and all that.
Yeah.
But that said, there's not stealing from the rich to give to the poor here. They're robbing banks.
It's your standard kind of. Like it's the John Dillinger, it's the Bonnie and Clyde. It's where there's a sympathetic local element where they're sympathetic to. And I don't know what the banking industry was like. It almost feels like, oh, we're stealing from the bank. But in my mm-hmm. mind, I'm like, my money's in the bank, so you're stealing from me. But they seem to be. That's kind of like how it's kind of portrayed. Or when they steal the strong box from the carriage,
right.
And the carriage driver is a former rebel, and in the end, he's like on their side, like he's stripping the other guy down and like, yeah, take everything, you know.
Right.
It's just kind of interesting to me. Like, but they do have a code because that's mm-hmm. what gets Dennis Quaid's character out of the band right away, because he ends up killing a guy in the beginning, an innocent. So it's that whole concept of like the honorable thief, you know, the honorable criminal, that it's basically they're fighting against the man and the government.
Right. Yeah,
that's how it's portrayed, at least.
Right. And I'm sure that's to some degree how at least some of them saw themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one other interesting piece of casting we didn't mention. So at the end of the movie, for that Northfield raid, they pick up two additional guys, right? Well, so one of those guys is played by Edward Bunker. And I don't know if you're familiar with Edward Bunker at all. He was a author. He wrote a number of crime things. He's a criminal, and then he got out finally, and he wrote some books. He was in Reservoir Dogs too.
Looking him up right now. Yeah.
Yeah. But he actually was a bank robber, right?
Okay. So,
you know, it's interesting. He actually did get, this is one of his early performances actually, in here is Bill Chadwell. But you know, he wrote No Beast So Fierce and some other.
He's in Tango and Cash as well.
Yeah, he's in a fair amount of stuff. Yeah.
One of my favorite buddy cop movies.
Yeah. But yeah, so this is a really interesting movie from a lot of different perspectives. But what do you think though? Do you think this would, well, I guess two things. Do you think one thing in here we see, which we don't see in a lot of Water. So Water Hill goes back and forth on whether he's going to show blood and violence or he's not. In this one, he was all about making the violence real. And he wanted you to feel the violence. And I think he succeeded. Where other movies, like, he doesn't have blood in there at all because he wants to be more of a fairy tale or whatever.
But sure.
In this one, he wants you to feel the violence. And I think it's successful.
Do you think? Yeah, I'll ask your questions. No. Sorry, keep going.
No, I'll edit that. do you think that... he does some slow motion here to do that, to accent the violence, especially in that final shootout. Do you think that was a good move? I mean, we're not talking like Zack Snyder kind of speed ramping or anything, but he does it not. He doesn't glamorize the violence. Isn't glamorized in here at all. I don't think at all.
No, it wasn't. Yeah. And when I talk about what kind of game you'd want to use for this, we'll talk about that. But, it's, you know, you're not getting shot five times, you know, it's not, no one's dodging bullets. No one's flying back like 10 feet through a pane glass window and, you know, whatever, arms aren't getting blown off, but there is, like, when they get shot, the wounds are, you know, are significant. Right. And I don't know enough about, the ballistics of that era, the post-Civil War ballistics. But I know they're using a lot, there's lever action rifles. And some of the pistols that they've used, I've seen on Pawn Stars, and are period. They appear to be period correct, like,
yeah, they are.
Civil War style pistols, based on what I've seen, like Pawn Stars, because they come in there and try to sell Civil War era stuff all the time.
No, when you're talking big bullets, all these things are. Yeah. You're talking,
yeah,
44,
they're large,
45
yeah,
caliber,
large caliber. Yeah. I know maybe the velocities.
Yeah.
I know the velocity is probably not as high as some modern weapons, but it's large caliber. It's big weapons. They're probably shooting at close range because the accuracy of the weapons isn't fantastic. I think that the action sequences work. The only action sequence that's a little strange, but it's cool too, is the knife fight. Is why I will tell you the knife fight scene. So in the knife fight scene, they tie a scarf in between their teeth and they have to fight within range. And there's many cultures that do this, right? Where they have the kind of like, you're locked together and you have to fight. The only thing I don't like about the knife fight scene is it's almost like they're attacking each other's knife. Like it's very showy, right? And it almost has a play kind of like stage feel to it. But it's not like as cool as a John Wick action scene. But it is a cool, pretty cool knife fight for a 1980 movie. Ooh. I will say that. But no, the action scenes are good. There's blood, but it's not like it's not like excessive. I would say there's a little bit of nudity. There's like a little side boob and a butt. And then I would say the thing that probably makes it the most difficult from a rating standpoint is probably the language and some of the themes.
Yeah, but the thing with even that. Isn't that horrible, because we don't get into there's no racial stuff.
So that's the other thing, the cast is not diverse. I don't recall seeing anyone non-Caucasian. There might be people with
You get James Remar is in here as a half-breed Native American, is he First Nations?
Yeah, I was gonna say there might be some First Nations folks or Indigenous, depending on your preferred term.
He's father is Russian Jewish and his mother is Native England and Irish. So no.
Okay.
He was, I think his skin was darkened a little bit for that part.
They definitely made him look. So there might be some,
He could have been cast better, right? Well,
he could have been cast. He could have actually picked someone from, one of the the people that are from that region originally. But, so, but it is a pretty homogeneous cast from that standpoint. So there's no racism, though they do call the people in Minnesota squareheads. What is that? I'm assuming it's because they're Northerners for some reason. I'm just curious because I've never heard that before. Do you know what that is, or would you have to Google that right now?
So normally it's like a stupid or an inept person is what the term means. You'll hear that also in Deadwood. I don't know if you remember watching Deadwood.
Yeah,
they use that term in the pilot. It's a contemptuous little girl gets killed.
Yeah. It's a contemptuous term used to refer to a German or Dutch person. A contemptuous term used to refer to a Scandinavian. Yes, there are a lot of Scandinavians.
Okay, so there are some racial stuff
in Minnesota. Okay. And I am also, based on my 23andMe, very Germanic. So I would be a squarehead, apparently. So if you are German or Scandinavian, Dutch, you may. Also, there's a bunch of roads around me called Vanderpay, Vanderhey, Vanderleuven. So, we're all squareheads up here, apparently. So they do mention that.
Be careful who you call a squarehead tomorrow when you walk outside.
Yeah.
Somebody might be offended.
I was just like, because they're going up to Minnesota and they're like, Minnesota. They're like, squareheads up there. And I'm like, squareheads kicked your ass. So
I think overall though, the movie works pretty well. It made money at the box office. It didn't make a killing, but it made a decent amount of money at the box office. So it was successful. I think it's well regarded by critics these days for the most part. And there weren't a lot of Westerns at this time frame, this time in theaters. So
because you're kind of at the end of the Western.
Yeah.
Like where it was like everything was Western. Yeah, I think it's pretty solid. The slow pacing, I know MW's got the like prone, mostly prone. Like I can't remember his rating scale. Mine is how much am I looking at my phone, right? Like how often am I looking at my phone? And I would say there was a couple points where, I would go to my phone and grab it and look just because you can't help yourself. But generally speaking, it was pretty entertaining, pretty good imagery. It was a big miss on Jesse James, who is the most iconic character from a history standpoint that I, at least I know, recognizable in the movie. And they didn't, there wasn't much, it was more of a focus on the youngers really.
Yes.
General. Uh-huh. And which maybe that's more historically accurate because Jesse James sounds cool, right? Like Jesse James. And then you got, the welder motorcycle guy now too, and I know he wasn't around then. So it was like when people like when the Billy the Kid movie comes out, like it's focused on Billy the Kid. And if someone's going to do a Jesse James movie, it'd be like focused on Jesse James. So for me, it was just surprising to see that Jesse James was not a very dynamic character or force in the movie. He was important and everyone talked about it, but he wasn't that dynamic. The other interesting thing I found about the movie was, and it's just so foreign because you think about it now, it's easy to identify people, right? Uh-huh. But that was the big thing with the Pinkertons was they wanted Ed Miller to be able to identify them because they don't know. It's like if you're just walking down the street, they don't know that you're Jason Connerly, right? Because there's not this database of like pictures and people didn't have driver's license, right? So they couldn't you could say you were anyone. You could be like, well, I'm Bob Sanderson.
I don't think it was as much that they couldn't identify who they were. I think it was more they wanted Ed to place them at the scene of the robbery. They wanted a confession or they wanted testimony to.
Okay. Well, I'll give you a counterpoint. When Stacy Keach walks in at the end.
He doesn't even know who he is.
He's like, I'm Frank James. I'm Jesse James' brother. And I've turned myself in on one condition that I'm allowed to bury my brother. Mm-hmm. Right. So they don't know. And then when they run into,
Bob, the younger's on the road. Yeah.
The younger's on the road. They didn't know who they were either.
Right.
So Jim Younger and John Younger, they didn't know who they were. I mean, they kind of knew because they're like kind of asking them, and then That sequence is a little weird because, like, I felt like they had their weapons drawn and the other guys didn't. So why didn't they just shoot him like off the bat? That was just a setup of that scene was a little strange because I felt like they had the surprise round, like, and they lost it somehow. I don't know. The other guys must have quick draw feet.
I think it just shows the, quick draw feet. But I think it also shows the fact that they didn't just drop the hammer on them.
Mm-hmm.
It's showing them is not, because they're still our protagonists in the movie, right?
They're main characters.
And we're not showing that. I mean, we could show them as vile bad guys, but we're not. And I don't know that they would have either in that period.
That definitely was the first step to setting up the Pinkertons as like bad guys. Which is the head Pinkerton actor? I'm trying to look in the list.
Oh, that's James Whitmore Jr. Now, he's in a bunch of things. I don't know what you'd recognize him from. He's a director now, actually. Believe it or not, he directed a ton of TV stuff. But he was in a bunch of TV stuff back in the day, Rockford Files and Battlestar Galactica, Baba Bad Sheep, Magnum P.I. He did a bunch of stuff like that.
He's directed a ton of TV stuff.
Yeah, he's mainly a TV actor.
NCIS Hawaii, NCIS... Lots of NCIS, Ray Donovan. Okay. The Good Wife, Quantico, Suits, Blue Bloods. I mean, not a crazy amount of 5 episodes of The Unit. I'm just looking at like things, Cold Case, 6 episodes, Dawson's Creek, 6 episodes. That's a departure from a lot from NCIS.
But
24, 6 episodes. Okay. Yeah. So he's directed, quite a few things. Beverly Hills 90210, 11 episodes. That's his biggest one I've seen so far.
Yeah.
Okay. That's an interesting career. Yeah.
Yeah. But he does. I think everybody actually does a pretty good job in here. I can't think of a really bad performance. I guess maybe the worst performance in here might be that guy you're talking about, the guy that does the quick draw when they meet him on the trail.
The Pinkerton?
The Pinkerton. I don't know how believable. I think everybody does, all the actors do a good job. There isn't like a really bad performance in the movie.
He's not as close as you get,
I think.
Yeah, there's no bad performances. I just don't like James Keach's portrayal of Jesse James, and maybe that was a directorial or writing decision. I don't know if he picked that.
Because he's a writer on this and executive producer.
You know, who the second best probably performance in the movie is probably Pamela Reed as Belle Starr.
Yeah. And folks, she does a really good job. Yeah. You know, Pamela Reed, of course, is Arnold Schwarzenegger's partner in Kindergarten Cop, but that's where people are going to know her from.
So her face was really recognizable, and that now makes sense. That is funny.
I think this was her first movie. I'd have to look, but this is very early in her career. If not her first, it's one of them. No, she's great in this. I really like this movie, but it's definitely a movie. It is what it is. It's one of those things, if you would go watch a theatrical production of this kind of thing, you'll enjoy this movie. And you don't mind the violence and all that. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking for a modern-paced movie, I think you might have some issues with this one.
No, yeah, I would agree. It's definitely... got that kind of, I don't know, it's got a certain vibe. And if you're not into that, then you won't like it.
So speaking of that, if you were going to partner this up with another movie for a double feature, what movie would you show with us? Just give me one at first.
So to offset kind of the historical accuracy and the slower pacing, I would do Young Guns. I would watch this and then I would watch Young Guns to get the Billy the Kid movie in there just to give that like late 80s. And that's nostalgic for me because that's when I started watching movies was like 1988, 1989. So like all of those, that era of movies is like when I really started to get into it. So yeah, I would pair it with Young Guns, though my close second would have been.
Let me get mine.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. Go ahead.
So I would actually do something different. I would give the new version of True Grit is what I would do for the other one. And the reason for that is we get to see, although portrayed this time by James Brolin, we get to see Cole Younger at the end of that movie. So who you mentioned the five bullets and shot back through the plate glass window. Actually, Cole takes 11 bullets in this movie. I think they said he's what he had in him. And then, you know, we do see a couple guys get knocked through the plate glass window when they all lined up and all shot. But I mean, that's kind of understandable because you've got what, seven guy, you know, five or six or seven guys shooting them at once. But yeah, the whatever year that was, the 2010 True Grit, the Coen brother version, I would pair this with it because it's the same kind of Western, like the same, like with the feel, with the genre, with the area of the country. But I think that one might play a little better to modern audiences, the pacing and whatnot. But I think it shares a lot of similarities with it.
That if I was going to run a similar movie, and so this was my decision. Mm-hmm. I was like, do I do 1969 True Grit? Do I do 2010 True Grit? Or do I go with something a little more upbeat? So if I was going to go, so I was hemming and hawing between True Grit and Young Guns. So I can't argue with your choice. If you're going with something that feels the same pacing wise and you're going to kind of do it that way, perfect. That would work great.
Yeah. Obviously there's so many great Westerns out there you could pair this with. But this one really stands alone as far as the, with the brothers. And I'm kind of surprised nobody's tried to do it, but again, you know,
I can't think of something that has this many, like American cinema. There might be some other foreign film that does it really well, right. But like, yeah, it's got a lot of relations in that, in a movie that is family oriented. So not family friendly, but orientated around family.
Right. So speaking of that, if you were going to run this at your table or use this as a inspiration to run a game at your table, what system would you use?
So I'll talk about a couple systems I might use, but immediately after this, I went on ChatGPT and started saying, like, I want to make a game called Rough Men and Rough Times was what it was called, a Western game about rough men and rough times. And then it starts. And then, so I asked ChatGPT what kind of stats, you know, mechanics, it needs to be, you know, it needs to be lethal and stuff, you know, like grit needs to be a thing. So I think it needs to be a gritty type game. Mm-hmm. Does it have to be a combat simulator? No, because the combat in the game is there, but it's quick. It's over very quickly. So I think whatever you do has to kind of be quick. The only scene that's kind of prolonged in combat is the one where they're inside the barn. And it's because they can't see and they're all firing at very long range, right? So that's that. So outside of making my own game, I'm sure Boot Hill would work very well. I mean, it's a Western game, but that feels almost more like a skirmish game, like miniatures to me. And I don't think I want that. So I was thinking I could take Solar Blades and Cosmic Spells because that's a fairly lethal game and it's got the archetypes of the smart, the nimble and the tough. And I get rid of the gifted, which is the spells. And then I could just change the weapons, right? And because that game's very simple. Light weapons do this much damage, medium weapons do this, heavy weapons do that. So you would just determine that's a heavy weapon, that's a medium, that's a light weapon. There's not much armor involved in this time period. So you could have pretty much exclude that completely. And yep. you could run a Solar Blaze and Cosmic Spells type game with that. I also went to Mutant Chronicles original from Target Games because that has good hit locations, right? So you could play that like getting shot in the arm and the leg in that type of thing. So I thought that. And then I don't know enough about the game, but I know Cyberpunk, is it 2020? You don't have Cyberpunk Red, right? You told me that.
Well, I've got both. I've played both.
But you, 2020 is your perfect. Yeah. You told me that the gunfighting mechanics in that are pretty good. So I would really look for something that, and that my answer is I'd run one of those. I know that's not, you're wanting something specific. I would look for something that's either allows me to do the themes of grittiness, or I would look for something that is not a combat simulator, but has like a medium simulationist where I can have hit locations and the gunfighting is impactful.
Yeah. So for me, for a Western game, there are a number of them out there. If we're going to go with a straight Western game, And there are a number of great systems out there, but for me personally, and it's going to really hurt Carl's heart to hear this, but you know, for me, Savage Worlds is too cinematic for this kind of game. The problem with Savage Worlds are with Bennies and with exploding dice and with everything else, it's just not going to be gritty. It's not going to be the grit that, you know, that you're looking for, right? For me, there's only two games that I would look at. I would look at Boot Hill, you know, preferably second edition, which is one that you've played with me before when we did play by post, which actually goes pretty quick if you're playing in person or online. Like,
yeah, and so I only had the play by post reference. So if I played that in person, maybe that
would goes go pretty quick. It does.
You know, I'll throw before you do your second one, like a top secret ish kind of system would work pretty well.
Yeah, it would. Top Secret would work, Gangbusters, but Boot Hill would be my number one, I think, honestly, because all the social stuff, you just role play.
You
know, you don't have to worry about the stats and all that. But if you wanted a crunchier system to give you mini games for all the social stuff and for horse riding and cattle raising and every kind of mini game you'd want for a Western you could ever think of, then we go to Aces and Eights. But Aces and Eights is the combat simulation because, you know, you take the silhouette of what you're shooting at and you put an overlay over it and you say, this is the part I'm shooting at. And you go, but Aces and Eights simulates down to the idea of you're doing this count up mechanic for how long things take and the penetration of the bullet. And, you know, when we did it, the bullet that killed Carl's character that Jason Hobbs shot, if it had gone through his arm before it entered his chest, it wouldn't have had enough penetration. It wouldn't have killed him. And it goes to that kind of detail, right?
That's more than I would be looking for. Right. I like the idea of one of my buddies, Mike, he doesn't listen to your show, but I used to always, whenever I built a game, I'll send it to him and be like, ooh, do you think of this? And he'll be like, oh, what about role play mechanics? I don't like role playing mechanics. I just don't. I would rather, and I know that's difficult in a game because you're very trusting of the game master or dungeon master or the Texas master or whatever we want to call the person right. in this game, cow master, to adjudicate fairly on the role playing side of things. I personally feel like I'm a fair game master. Just ask me. So that's my preference is I like combat to be like medium granularity with like, especially when you're talking about a game where like getting hit by a bullet really matters. See, I don't want high hit points. You know what I mean?
That's why Boot Hill matters because that's why I think Boot Hill would work for you because Boot Hill gets out of the way. It gives you combat mechanics and it has gambling mechanics and some other mechanics in there too. But, you know, for the most part, the social stuff, you just role play. And then the combat stuff actually does go pretty quick. And the cool thing is with the gunfight stuff is you're rolling on a table and you're rolling to get the severity of that wound. And, you know, everybody is potentially going to die from that one shot, you know, if you roll that fatal shot, you know, so it's a deadly system. And I think this game, this would need a deadly system like that. I don't think this should have hero points or bennies or anything like that.
So the only counter argument I'll give you that is if you want something that has sort of a plot thing, the only thing I could see adding would be like a plot armor mechanic. And maybe it reduces the severity of the wound. Like, so let's say you have so many plot armor points for your characters. For your character's career, maybe it's not even something you can gain, right? Like let's say you start the game with like 3 plot armor points and you can reduce a wound by 1 severity 3 times in the career of that character so that they can, so that session 1, you know, Cole Younger doesn't get his head blown off. So instead he gets shot in the face and now he's got a scar, right? So you expend 1 plot armor point to take a lethal wound down to a severe wound or a severe, you know, you know what I mean? So you have a little bit of story continuity. It kind of depends on what type of game you want to run.
Yeah, exactly. And you could just do the top secret thing. You mentioned top secret with the fame fortune points.
Yeah.
And you just do where the GM rolls. And, you know, when you create your character, the GM secretly makes a roll. And you have that many, you know, fortune points or whatever.
Yeah.
And you're not going to know as the player how many you have. And then the GM, you know, but the GM would use those. So when a fatality gets rolled, it would get reduced to a serious wound,
or, yeah,
you know, whatever. But yeah, then when you run know. Out, you run out, but you don't know yeah. how many you have. And I, yeah, no, I think a, that'd be a, the way to do it.
That would be another way to do it too. Yeah. That'd be cool. Cause then the players, you know, they're kind of wondering like, is this the end for Billy yeah, Smith like or a, whatever?
Yeah, yeah. Well, like a D4 plus two. Right.
Yeah.
So that way it's not just one, but yeah. it's small, it's low enough, you know, it could be as low as three or as high as six. And,
yeah.
And it's one of those
I
things.
Like that.
Yeah. Something like that. Well, was what
there's
I
one. Yeah. There's another thing you said. I don't think you need mechanics for it. You don't need gambling mechanics. You can just,
no, you don't. Yeah. You
can
don't.
Just play the game. Like if you show up and it's Texas Hold'em, we could just play Texas Hold'em that night. If that's the Jason Hobbs would love that. I know he likes to play poker.
Right,
like we could just play the game. You could have a little mini roulette wheel. You could have, you know, I don't know when craps is invented, but you know, I love craps. You could play craps.
When you have the gunfights, you can give out paintball guns to people and them.
Oh yeah, we could do that too. Yeah, yeah. And then we could just like, well, we're playing online. That's difficult. My family, right. I don't know if would appreciate if I ran upstairs right now and just started blasting away with a paintball gun or an airsoft rifle.
The main reason I bring up the fact that Boot Hill has gambling mechanics in there is just because people say, oh, well, it's just, and I'm not saying you say this, but people say, oh, it's just a skirmish game. It's not a real role playing game. Well, yeah, it's got advancement mechanics. It's got mechanics for things to happen out of combat. So it's just as much a role-playing game as some of these, you know, lasers and feelings or something is, right? So, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. ICRPG, which I've been studying because I'm working on a project, doesn't have a lot of role-playing mechanics. It's
honestly,
mostly
you know
combat
what?
Mechanics. Most role-playing games are combat mechanics. Right. That's what they are. Yeah. Unless you're talking like Monster of the Week or like... Power by the Apocalypse type game, or like Quarter Blades is all intrigue and you have all these clocks for social things. Like most games are just combat mechanics.
That's true. And you know what? ICRPG is another system that would work really well for this. You could just use the Ghost Mountain rules, remove the supernatural stuff.
Yeah. Well,
that's it's really deadly. Honestly,
yeah, it is because if you keep the heart, if you don't give extra hearts and you're rolling gun effort, which is a D8. So players have 10 hit points. So two. And if you added like a critical damage mechanic, just show critical hit and someone's probably dead. Cause you're not, and any armor that you would have, like from an armor standpoint would be like heavy jackets and maybe like a scene from Back to the Future, three right. where you were like a but that's not, that wasn't common, right? Like body armor wasn't a thing, so like yeah, if you're rolling a DA and the average damage, you know, it's gonna take half a character's hit points away almost. That's a pretty significant wound.
Yeah, you really don't need a Western game to do this. You could do this with ICRPGs enough, or you know, Western game, Star Wars, D6, or with any of these systems, really.
Oh, Mutant Year Zero engine using like Twilight 2000 or and just changing the weapons or Coriolis, you know, like those that would work very well as it also. I was thinking about that. I almost forgot about that. That would be a good game too. A good chassis to build yourself a Western game off of.
Yeah. So there are a lot of things out there, but cool. Well, Eric, I want to thank you for joining me tonight to discuss this.
Yeah. I got to put the kids to bed. So I appreciate you ending this at this time. Perfect timing.
Yeah. No problem. You want to tell everybody where they can find you?
Yeah. So you can find me, through any of your podcatchers, the Omega 3D Chicken Coop podcast. I do have an episode that I'm going to be releasing soon. I recorded it with Gabe from the Gaming and BS Discord channel, or BSlandia, and it's about tone in your games. I also have a website, omega3dchickengames.com. It's got some free stuff on it. It's nothing fancy. You can go there and check it out if you want to. And you can find me on the Audio Dungeon Discord, the Gaming and BS Discord. I'm in Carl's Discord, though. Sorry, Carl, I don't participate very often in it. I'm in Hobbs's Discord. I'm in Absolute Tabletop. I'm Runehammer. I'm in a lot of Discords. But the main places you can find me are the BSlandia RPG community. That's probably my main hangout. So that's me.
No, very cool. And that episode might be out, folks. This is coming out on the 10th of March. So we'll see.
That's 10 days from now. And I've been sitting on it already for like a week and a half, 2 weeks.
Well,
I don't know, Jason, that the pressure's on. I might get it out. We'll see.
Excellent. Well, Eric, again, thank you so much for joining me. Folks, thank you for tuning in. I think we both, well, I don't know. I mean, I give this 2 thumbs up with the caveat of the pacing and obviously the violence and stuff, but I think this is a good movie. I think it's worth seeing. I think it's a pretty great historical Western, you know, attempted a historical period piece.
Recommend watch. Yeah, it's good. If you like slow movies, maybe not your thing, but there's nothing bad about it. It's a solid movie.
Right. There's more gunfighting in this, and it goes a lot faster than the Brad Pitt one, the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. So, you know, there's that going for it. So, okay, folks, I will let you go. Thank you again. As always, we're thanking TJ for the wonderful music and Ray Otis for the coffee cup clip art, even though today we're using a poster from The Long Riders. And remember, be excellent to each other.
Your auntie or a joker by your spouse, but the operator's screaming it's coming from inside the house. What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? Well, the audience is pretty sure he took a pretty head, and the only question left is if I could shoot him dead. Bring on the gore, bring on the gore. I want some. Butcher is a dustman and your moil is by the tipper, and I'm assuming that your partner back there in the wood chipper. Don't look away, don't look away, don't look away, don't look away. Well, the zombies are arising and the world has gone to heck. We're living for the dying and we're dying for the train wreck.